Hello and welcome. In this episode, I will be speaking with somebody who does not believe that cannabis should be legal. This is not the first time I've spoke with them, so I just wanted to share a short message at the beginning of this episode. I encourage you to check out our previous conversations because there are times throughout this episode where we say, "Oh, but we've discussed this at length before." And if you haven't seen those episodes, you might just think, "Gosh, we're breezing over some really important subject matter." I want to reiterate, please check out the former conversations I've had with my friend Jordan. I believe this will be the fifth conversation. I've had three on the Chillinoy podcast and one here on the Cole Memo. This will be my second on the Cole Memo. I've hosted a debate with Jordan. I will have links to everything that I'm referring to in the show notes for this episode. So please, if you want the full context, for these conversations, I would encourage you to watch all of these conversations before watching this conversation. Enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome, folks. This is the Cole Memo. Every episode is released in audio, video, and transcript format. To find the transcript audio or video version of any episode, please refer to the description of the episode that you're listening to now. Within that description, you can find a link that will take you to our website, which will display the transcript for this episode and the platforms where you can find this episode in audio or video formats. If you are unable to locate the episode description on whichever platform you're listening from, I get it. Every platform's different. Simply note the episode number and visit thecolememo.com. I just rolled out a new search functionality. So you can take note of that episode number, search it in our search bar, and from there you can find the corresponding episode, and then you'll be able to access the audio, video, and transcript version of that episode. You might also find any links that we reference during the episode so that you might be able to do your own research. I'm sure we'll be referencing a few today. If you're not listening to this episode of the Cole Memo on Patreon, then you're listening to this episode later than our patrons. To become a patron, go to thecolememo.com/Patreon. It only costs $3 a month, and it's a great way to support our show. You get our episodes as they release. Another way to support our show is at thecolememo.com/support. You can make a one-time monthly or yearly contribution of your choice. That's right, any amount. You can throw us a dollar. Every little bit counts. Equipment fees, distribution fees, travel fees, it all adds up. So if you're able to support us, thecolememo.com/support is a way you can do that. But one of the best ways to support our show is free. Subscribe to or follow the show. Leave us a positive review from wherever you're listening to us from. Favorite this episode, give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, or post a review. I said it twice, so you can tell reviews are important. Your engagement and support is appreciated. Today is March 1st, 2024. I'm sitting back down with my friend Jordan Davidson. Jordan, say hi for our listening audience.
Hey everyone, it's great to be back here with you, Cole. Excited for the conversation today.
Yeah. Last time I saw Jordan, in case you guys missed it, was in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. Here's a picture of us having a great time together. And I guess just to kick off our conversation, Jordan, I want to give you the floor. I know that, you're with Learn About Sam, and you can go to learnaboutsam.org to learn more. But I've also saw that recently you are VP of another organization, maybe, or something. So I wanted to give you the floor to not only remind us who you are, but maybe even give us an update on what you're doing nowadays.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I'm actually one room away from where we hung out and filmed in the WeWork. But yeah, so doing everything with Sam and everything with the Foundation for Drug Policy Solutions, which is another one of our kind of organizations doing just drug policy generally, not just marijuana. But there is a political action committee called Protect Our Kids PAC that I'm now helping to run. And it's really exciting, kind of relatively new venture. And it's we're going to be doing some good work and kind of supporting candidates, both Democrats and Republicans, especially at the federal level. Who are, in our view, good on drug policy. Might have some, what that means might mean a different thing to you than to me, but that's going to be our kind of, general goal
Yeah.
through kind of a different realm.
Yeah. And I know I say it every time we get together, but Jordan, I appreciate your willingness to
And we also launched our own podcast.
Yeah. TDR podcast, right?
The Drug Report podcast.
It's about damn time.
Have you seen, you know what, your listeners might actually be interested in this anyway, because it's not really, it's pretty good. So the Drug Report is something that we put out now, which is like, you can sign up for it. You can just look it up. It's basically like for all drug policy, just is like shows just like tons and tons of all the latest articles out there. So like all the latest stories for kind of just drug policy at large, not just marijuana, not just fentanyl, not just psychedelics, kind of everything. And so it's kind of like just a resource hub for people to say, oh, I didn't see that story came out, or, you know, and, you know, even your listeners, even if they disagree with, you know, a little bit or half or everything that I say, you know, they might be interested in seeing kind of what's going on just in drug policy stories they haven't heard of. So I'm pretty sure the website is, I mean, that's the podcast you have right there, but the website's got to be like thedrugreport.com or something. Yeah, thedrugreport.org, thedrugreport.org. That's the story. That's the website. It has a bunch of stories on it. So.
Awesome. Well, there you go. I was, my apologies for cutting you off. I said, about damn time you guys started a podcast. I was asking you when you would start a podcast last time we were chatting, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, we just decided to do it. It's not like a big, you know, you don't have to have a super crazy major operation these days to do a little podcast. It's only going to be, you know, maybe 5 to 10 minutes, maybe 15, you know, it's not super long. So, but it's just a little something that we're doing.
You probably brought it up in a meeting. You're like, dude, this freaking stoner came to DC and just set up his mic in like minutes. We could do this, guys.
So I actually haven't been the one pushing for the podcast. My boss has been pushing for a long time. It's not like I'm against the podcast, but I just never thought about it that much.
I was just making the joke to your point, it's something I always say, like, folks, it doesn't take much. I bought this little mic from Guitar Center. You know, you buy a little thing to hook into your computer and off to the races. You can host a podcast. So, well, dude, I every time we sit down and talk, I never know where to start, but I thought maybe we could start with, we've got a lot of different things we could talk about today, you know, rescheduling and all of that stuff. Some news has came out since the last time we spoke. But one thing I wanted to start off with that I just feel like, I don't know, I brought it up last time and I never really thought about it clearly. So I wanted to bring up the idea again of, it seems like in a weird way, what I'm pushing for oftentimes, which is like the complete decriminalization of cannabis. And sometimes I'll even go to further drugs, which I know I will probably never get you to agree to. I'm not going to try to today, but at least with cannabis, I pretty well argue that like we should completely decriminalize the possession, cultivation, and use. Not in cars. You can't drive high. I'm not saying that, but like you should be able to smoke it where you smoke a cigarette. That's what I believe. And I guess the question I asked you last time was, in a weird way, it seems like Sam is like on the same page. Obviously not, but it seems like Sam is on the same page as licensed cultivators, in that they only, and by licensed cultivators, I mean people that are legally in the cannabis business, right? Legal cannabis businesses. It seems like Sam and legal cannabis businesses both agree that like it should be maybe decriminalized for personal use, but that's it. And it was just interesting last time we chatted, I feel like you were saying that complete decriminalization would lead to like this, you know, panacea of, you know, bad things, abuses with cannabis companies. And my thing about that is, it seems like the cannabis companies don't agree with me. So it's like they see.
Well, is the point that you're trying to make that there are some marijuana companies who are MSOs and who think that right now they're kind of reaching their peak because with federal legalization, you know, it opens it up a little bit more, and you know, they're worried that they'll have a harder time controlling their monopoly.
Thank you. Yes, you got right to the point.
Yeah, right. So So I mean I just I think like if I mean I guess the answer to your question like to that would be like kind of yes, kind of no. I don't think we're on the same page because even if like they're I'll be articulate about it. Our position, I think, is one that's based in principle, right? Our position is the same position for the federal government as is for the state government, as would be for a local government, right? Like we think there needs to be an easing up in terms of criminal justice restrictions that have been criminal restrictions that have been put in place and some criminal sanctions for some activity like possession or use in certain circumstances, right? And there's a lot of nuance and we've gone very deep in that a bunch of times. I think the position of the marijuana companies is different in a couple ways. One, I don't think it's as principled. What they're saying is we don't want just decriminalization, we want complete legalization in the states that we operate in so that we can sell it. Right, we don't want legalization in the states, but what they also say is, well, we don't want legalization at the federal level. Not all of them, but maybe some of them, because they think it would threaten their like oligopoly or monopoly or whatever, right? Within the industry, and that's just about the bottom line. And that's kind of like what our critique of the marijuana industry is anyway, right? We think they're about their the you know the bottom line and resulting in addiction for profit. And by the way, you know, this might be a little bit off course from your question, but I think it's worth saying because it's something that I don't think I've articulated well enough before on your show. And I actually was at an event. My boss, Luke, was in DC today. And so we did some things together. And he talks about this all the time. Like he talks about kind of the operators in the marijuana industry. And he makes very clear to say, I don't think all, maybe, I don't think, you know, all, maybe not even like most of the operators in this space are these like evil people conniving to send our country into a spiral of addiction. That's not what I think either. And I'd like to make that very clear. I think there are some very bad actors in the space, but definitely not all, maybe not most. The issue that we have when we say addiction for profit, it's not necessarily all evil corporate boardrooms who want addiction. It's just the like my because my boss did some startup years ago that he ended up selling in the health space, and so he kind of learned a lot about business, probably knows more than I do. And his whole thing is that you have a legal responsibility to your shareholders, right? When you run a for-profit business, when you run a corporation. And he says that, you know, there were investors in his business that came to him and said, I expect a 10x return. And so there are hedge funds that are specifically designed around cannabis now. And those guys are expecting a certain return on their product. So let's say you're trying to be a good guy and you're in the marijuana space, right? And you're getting all this investment to grow your business. You might have the best of intentions, but you're expected to return for your shareholder. Your duty,
Right.
your legal duty isn't to the public. And so the point is, when we when they know whether they think of it concretely or not, the statistics that in the alcohol industry, this is statistics, right? This is real. I have the data for this. 75% of sales are made up from 10% of customers. 22% of sales for marijuana in Colorado are made up, or sorry, 22% of the customers make up 67% of the sales. That's like what we talk about. That's what I mean when I say addiction for profit. It
Say that
relies on
last one again,
alcohol.
can you? Sorry.
22% of customers in the marijuana market are, you know, making up 67% of the purchases, right? Of the profit. So like that is a population that's very likely dependent on marijuana or addicted, just like with alcohol or alcoholics, right? It depends on that. You might not go into it thinking, oh, I'm going to get more people hooked on a substance. I doubt many people do, but that is what you basically have to go toward in order to meet the demands of your shareholders. And so that's like, I just want to kind of explain that more in detail, what I mean. It's like the trappings of the capitalist system that we live in, right? And in great, you know, free enterprise and it is great in many ways, but I think for addictive substances, it isn't great. So I just wanted to lay that out more thoughtfully, maybe, because I think people try and on the other side of the issue, I think there's a lot of demonization that goes on in this space. And I think people who are against Sam and like really, really hate Kevin Savette, my boss, and hate Luke Navarro's, my other boss, and hate me and everything we do, I think a lot of that hatred, you know, we could go into the kind of like the psyche of that, but I think a lot of that has to do with like a perception that we think these people are like all the people who listen to you or support legalization are evil, or in the industry are just like purely evil, demonic, like terrible people. And that's not actually what we think. We think there are very bad actors in the space, and some of them probably dominating the space, but there's more nuance to it. So want to like kind of clear that up and maybe also humanize my perspective a little bit on this issue.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. And I guess you really did touch on it, and it seems like you understand where I'm coming from, but I just feel like the one part that I don't, that we're not on the same page about, is they say that. So you're saying that this could lead to like complete legalization, could lead to addiction for profit. But as you also acknowledge, they view complete legalization as something that might challenge their monopoly. In other words,
no, what I'm saying is complete. That, first of all, I don't think everyone in this space thinks that. I doubt even a majority think that it will necessarily challenge that. And they're making sure that, I think a lot of these corporate entities are making sure that that won't happen. For example, you have the PREPARE Act, which is a bill introduced by John Hickenlooper, senator from Colorado, which is written by the alcohol industry, right? It's written by probably like groups like CPAIR, which is the big tobacco, big alcohol kind of marijuana lobbying firm, right? Like those are the groups that are writing a bill which prepares for federal legalization, kind of like lays out a plan for regulation. And all it says is essentially we're going to regulate it like alcohol, right? Going to instantly to the corporate model that we know best. So, I mean, I don't think everyone's probably as nervous, but even if they are, it's like, that just like proves the point. Like they care so much about their bottom line that they don't even care about the supposed justice that legalization will bring. Like they just care so much, only care about the money. If you're really against federal legalization and pro-state legalization because you're worried that you won't have a monopoly, you do not care about the social justice. And we're seeing, and I'm sure you know this, because I put you in the camp of like, I'd say the good camp. I think there are two camps. It's like bifurcated. There's one, people like you, who really believe in the criminal justice, like to their core, and like maybe more have the roots in the more the hippie style movement, right? Like peace, love, justice, doing what's right. And you and I might disagree on what justice should looks like. But still you are a firm believer in that. And there are even like other folks who I like put in that camp, like, you know, and all name drop, like, you know, I haven't interacted with all these people as directly. And I don't know, you know, I think Shalene Title probably falls really much in that camp. You know, Tom Angel, I think Marijuana Moment probably really does fall in that camp as well. And, you know, probably hates the, like, you know, I'm just guessing, I can't speak for him, but probably maybe not hates, I don't know, but skeptical of just like how big business is taking over, just like how spin that I see in some of his work. There are people like that. And then you have the people like Green Thumb Industries and you know, all the CPAIRs of the world, and like Andrew Friedman runs CPAIR, you know, those kind of people, like they're different. The suits, the corporations, right? The guys who just care about the bottom line. So I think those are two different camps, and one camp I have a lot more respect for than the other. And the other camp just cares about the money, I think. And you know, the former one you're in probably really cares about the policy and kind of criminal justice stuff. We might disagree at the end of the day, but at least it's a matter of intention, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, yeah, you hit it on the head. For a second there, I thought we weren't still, but that last bit that you said, I was like, okay, we are on the same page. Like when, it's just interesting, like that, that they say these companies position themselves to support social justice efforts, and they don't really, because it's like half measure to keep their profitability. Like you say, they report to their shareholders. They don't report to somebody like me per se, or the public, like, hey, you know. And actually, I've even had people, because I kind of go and I kind of litmus test some of these bigger operators. I say, like, if you're going to claim to be, you know, for this movement and everything, you should support, you know, what I believe to be meaningful reform, and not what I call these like half measures where you can only possess or purchase a certain amount. Because if somebody can purchase more than they, we might not get them to keep coming back to the store all the time. Like, this is actual logic I've heard applied, you know, like, anyways, that point was hard. Like, it's hard to verbalize, but it's, I do feel that it's like an interesting, you know, when we say smart approaches to marijuana, I think it is notable to say that it seems like, at least what I'm proposing seems to challenge what these companies stand for, which is profitability. Like, they view the complete decriminalization as like, and you're right, actually, I should say not all companies, but it seems like the big predatory ones, you know, the big ones that are just, so,
I mean, I know people, I won't, you know, I won't like, I mean, it's public, it was on your show, right? So like, when I talked to Justin Strekel, who, you know, I've talked to since, and I know he's not really in the space anymore, and wish him on it and his family all the best. But like, you know, I've had a good rapport with him, and, you know, he's like, I'm with you, Jordan, like, ban advertising. And I think that would make all those, that would scare, you know, the living crap out of people who run these big firms and are part of the kind of MSO gang type, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, no, straight up. So, well, that was the first thing I wanted to discuss with you. I wrote down, complete decrim is against the profit motive of these big companies. It's just, again, it's a thought that I had last time, and I felt like I didn't vocalize it well enough when we spoke last time.
Yeah.
So, you want to talk about deschedule, reschedule? It seems like it's going to be reschedule, but let's talk about it. So last time we spoke, we were kind of speculating, and, and, you know, I believe that at the time, President Biden had given the directive to HHS, and that maybe something was occurring, but at the time, the actual recommendation from HHS had not been released. So since we last spoke, I believe that the HHS recommendation had been revealed via FOIA, and that it is HHS's recommendation is to reschedule to Schedule 3.
Yeah.
Do you still stand where you did last time, which you were, I know, I'm sure the DEA still doesn't agree with it, as you said last time, so I doubt that changed. But now that it is public, that the recommendation is Schedule 3, do you still feel as like confident that they're not going to do that to Schedule 3?
So this is how I'll frame it. And I don't want to be in like the crazy predictions game.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't want people listening to this be like tweeting like, oh, like the Sam prediction is this or that. Like, this is just
disclosure. We're both just talking.
This is
out
like
loud.
Personal, just this, like, I'm just, you know, if I'm like wrong about this, like, don't, you know,
sure.
I think, how should I word this? I actually was thinking this, and I came up with a good way to word it, and now I forget. I was going to word it on your show.
I can play that one.
I think schedules three is them accepting the recommendation, putting Schedule 3 is certainly very possible. I think them putting it in Schedule 2 in a weird way might even be the most likely situation. And I think keeping it Schedule 1 is certainly not out of the realm of possibility, but I kind of doubt they will. I don't give it like even less than 10%. I give it more of a chance than that they keep it Schedule 1. But I don't think it's like the leading candidate for what will happen. That's kind of what my opinion is. I think them putting in Schedule 2 is basically like the sleeper pick in terms of for what will happen that no one really thinks about, but I think it will might even have the highest likelihood. But hey, look, they could do anything. Like, they're not going to deschedule it, that's for sure. But
damn it.
damn it to you. But you know, like that's basically my, what's your opinion?
I feel like they're just going to reschedule it to Schedule 3.
Yeah.
And as I told you last time, like, the Cole memo, like, it's, these state markets are going to go forward. Big Pharma is going to have access, you know, to be able to research or do whatever the hell else they want to do. But I don't view it as changing much of anything. Maybe these like big companies, they won't have to pay 280E anymore, maybe. But I've even heard it's all speculation right now. Again, let's reiterate that for the third time. But I've read that maybe the 280E would only apply if you actually had that Schedule 3 DEA license. And so if you have a state license, you're still 280E, buddy, because you're not, you know, you're not within that framework, if you will. So yeah, I really don't know what to say. I'm right there with you in that, like, I just don't know what to think.
I think Schedule 2 just, I think for them, I think Schedule 2 just avoids so many headaches, and Biden can still, for the pro-marijuana constituency, frame it as progress.
Yeah.
Schedule 3 will give the administration and the DEA so many headaches.
And I think to your first point, it's going to get to people that don't pay attention as much as you and I do. And they're going to be like, oh, the federal government recognized cannabis as a medicine. And they're just going to
doubt Biden really. Like, I mean, I just like with his historic stances, like maybe he's moved and really doesn't want out of Schedule 1. Maybe his advisors just told him that he has to say that. Like, I don't think deep down he's gung-ho about this, right? Like, just his history on drug policy would say otherwise, right? Like, I think everyone who listens to this program probably knows that.
I've got a quote from him back in the day that I read on one of our first shows together. He said that today's marijuana is like comparing a laser gun to a buckshot. I think he said that back in the Senate, so... So yeah, he was saying kind of what you said back in the day, though.
Right. I'm not gonna name names, but like I know former Biden people, like in terms of from the Senate data, he doesn't like this. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like the stuff. You know,
doesn't smoke weed. I'm just joking.
Well, no, he doesn't like it. No, I'm not saying it like that. Like, he doesn't. You know, he's never been a legalization guy. So, and I think we all.
That's
know that.
What I was trying to make a joke
right.
to that.
Right. Yeah.
He doesn't strike me as the.
I'm not breaking any news here by saying that.
Right.
But yeah, so I mean, I just think with, and you know, we can get into however deeply we want to get into it, but Schedule 3 presents a lot of real problems, I think, for the administration. And potential rollout and potential challenges that, you know, they would have to overcome in order to make that really happen. I think there are already challenges and issues with just because of how the HHS recommendation ended up going.
Yeah. Let's watch this clip and then we can get back to rescheduling. I actually want to ask you, because I've heard from a cannabis industry lawyer that, yeah, deschedule is out of the question. I want to ask you why you say that, but let's watch this clip that I know that we both caught interest in. It's from a grown seminar.
Because there has been a lot of research in the, you know, last 5 to 10 years. But there's no mention of the 5-part test. It just disappears. It doesn't exist anymore. Now there's a 2-part test. And the 2-part test, in the same way the 5-part test was written in a way that you couldn't pass, cannabis could not fail the 2-part test. It was like, is it being medically used under the supervision of healthcare professionals? Yes. Is there some credible evidence that maybe it helps in a medical way? Yes. So it's really interesting, and this happens in law a lot and in politics a lot. The way they set up the question made the answer inevitable, right? And the way they set up the question, I think, was politically motivated. You know, this time it broke our way, so it's great. But it did, you know, we can talk about this later. It will open things up to change.
What do you think about that?
Hit the nail on the head. Yeah. Totally right. You know, for your, again, I'm sure your listeners and viewers know more about this stuff than, you know, comparatively than probably most people in the world. But a brief overview, and, you know, Sam has an analysis on it. I encourage everyone to read it. Basically, the HHS review was totally bogus. As people on our team say, actually, like, it's basically, you know, in a weird way, like the death of medicine. I think that's a little bit extreme, obviously, but really what that, and is it Joanna? Was that her name? I forget. What Joanna was saying is totally right. That the review basically says, okay, are there practitioners who are prescribing / recommending marijuana? And they're only allowed to do that in certain states because of ballot initiatives and state legislatures that have legalized medical marijuana. And so basically FDA is saying, well, because there are people who use medical marijuana, then it must be medicine. It's like a total logical fallacy. But like, that's the death of that. If that's what we're defining as medicine, then what's medicine? Right? That, like, what is the standard for that? Right? There should be some level of efficacy. The five-factor test that she was mentioning, you know, there's a little bit more depth to that. So for the past 30 years, the FDA has used a five-factor test in terms of for criteria for currently accepted medical use reviews and drug scheduling recommendations. Now, this test isn't just some random thing that was drawn up and some random bureaucrat said, oh, that makes sense. It was actually something that was created in the 90s. A federal court actually overviewed it. And they even said that the test was, you know, effective. It was the United States Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia. And they examined and validated it. Funny enough, the case in which this is mentioned was Alliance for Cannabis Therapeutics versus Drug Enforcement Administration. And in the court's opinion, it explains that the marijuana industry practitioners had conceded that the five-factor test had no flaws. That is very, very important. So the pro-legalization movement in the 1990s, in federal court, was saying that this test was good, flawless. Federal court said that too. Now, and so it was used. It was used for Republican, Democratic administrations. Now, because marijuana has certain aspects to it that make it very hard to pass the test, aspects which, by the way, are very important to medicine. Like, one of the aspects with which the marijuana people have an issue with is under the five-factor test, it needs to be like reproducible. The drug needs to be, it's like, of course it should need to be reproducible. Yeah. They're like, well, marijuana can't exactly, it's very hard to do that. I'm like, okay, well, big whoop then, it shouldn't be medicine. Do you really want to go to a doctor who prescribes you a dose of medicine and then someone else the same exact dose of medicine for the same exact issue, and you can't rely, you can't trust that the pills you're getting in that bottle or whatever you're getting is effectively reproduced and it's the same stuff? Of course you should know that. Like, it's ridiculous.
To your point, that does happen. So first of all, against your point, that does happen sometime with medicine. But to your point, so I can explain that if you'd like. I can expand upon
that. Sure.
But
yeah, sure. Yeah, please
do. Point, like, to your point first is – like cannabis, I'm going to hold up a cannabis joint right now. This is not a this is not a homogenous mixture like a Tylenol pill. This is leaves that I rolled up myself. It's a heterozygous mixture, right? And as a result, as you say, it's not replicable. This joint, there's no other joint like it. I just rolled it myself. But I say that as a joke, but I say that really because there's no way, as far as I'm concerned, that you can standardize it. In fact, many states have an allowable potency threshold. You can be above 10% or you can be below 10%. And like you say, we can use medicine because that's a powerful example, but
Marinol is approved, right? Like, I'm not saying that it's not possible to have cannabis derived drugs like Marinol, Epidiolex.
You're right.
The cannabis plant, like correct, literally the plant and everything that comes with it. That's the difference.
Bingo. And that is the difference. I mean, yeah, as the plant, it's a heterozygous mixture versus what you just described, like Marinol, which is a homogenous mixture, which like they through and through, it is the same, like, you know, I don't know.
Which
I don't think
THC.
You drink it.
But it's like, which is pure THC. So
like, yeah,
THC drug.
Right. But so I guess what I'm saying is nobody can grow anything, to your point, consistent enough to where it would ever be the same experience for one individual. Because back to my point that I said that was against your point, for example, you know, I've been prescribed ADHD medication in the past and they haven't given me enough. And they're like, well, based on your weight, and you know, that should be enough. And it just wasn't doing it. And all of a sudden they gave me the right dose and bam. So it's not so much against your point, but I just wanted to say that
Yeah.
medicine is not as cut and dry as, oh, hey, Jordan and Cole are the same weight. Let's give them the same dose. Like we've got different metabolisms. But I know it's a kind of a weak point, but I
Yeah,
wanted
yeah, yeah,
to,
yeah. Yeah, no, it's a
you
good
know.
point. Yeah. I wanted to say too, this was in our analysis, and
Yeah.
it's a great quote that like no one has hyped up really that much. In the Raich case, which is a famous case about, you know, that involves some marijuana stuff. During the oral arguments, famous Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer said, medicine by regulation is better than medicine by referendum. I think that's a fantastic quote. And you know, the kind of reason that we included that here is, and Justice Breyer joined the decision in that case, which prohibited medical marijuana or marijuana for medicinal use under the CSA, Controlled Substances Act. You know, I think that's a great quote because this FDA review kind of seeps into that, kind of like using, you know, the referendums that have legalized this as part of almost the evidence for its medicinal value. There, you know, there, it, like it would take us hours to get through why this review was so bad. You know, a few highlights that just that I've told talked to you about and maybe texted you about that are kind of shocking to me. Part of the new kind of two-part test. I'm trying to find right here. It says, I just want to actually.
While you're looking for that, I don't mean to throw you another question, but can you just try to like, how are they able to just drop the 5-point test and just do a 2-point? Or do you not really know?
No. So I mean, I don't know. They just could probably
They
do it.
just
They, I
do
mean,
what
they
they
just did
want.
it. He didn't explain it. So basically what they said, was that so? The old 5-part test, part of the third point was there must be adequate and well-controlled studies, you know, to prove kind of like efficacy.
Yeah.
You know, you need like controlled trials and things like that. For the 2-factor test, I will read directly quoting what it says. First factor. Factors considered in favor of a positive finding for, you know, medical value of marijuana included whether, one, favorable clinical studies of the medical use of marijuana, although not necessarily adequate and well-controlled clinical studies that would support approval of a new drug application have been published in peer-reviewed journals and or, you know, another than another point. So what they're saying is that as long as a study says favorable things about medical marijuana, it doesn't have to be well-controlled clinical study that, you know, would actually lead to supporting the approval of a new drug, an NDA, new drug application. And an NDA is not a non-disclosure agreement. The new
Yeah.
drug application, like that is what ends up, if it's approved, leads to a drug, I think like Marinol, right? Like an actual drug being approved by the FDA. So the FDA is literally saying, like, let's just accept medical marijuana, but let's admit through the process that our acceptance doesn't necessarily mean that there's even a shot that there will ever be another kind of like a marijuana drug, because they probably don't think there could ever be. So like that's ridiculous that that's the standard. It's such a loose standard. You know, that's just another thing. And then the actual even more significant than that, which no one I don't think really looked at. I did a very deep dive on this to get this information. They only used 3 studies to basically justify their position that marijuana is medicine. So the strongest evidence, for example, for pain was one of the things that they said it was effective for, that the FDA cited, was from NASA, the National Academies of Science and Medicine. Their report from 2017, I just froze here, I'll just
Yeah, I was gonna say.
So their report from 2017 concluded that there was substantial evidence that marijuana helps with pain, right? That's basically the strongest point they have. I don't know if the people at the FDA actually went back in the NASM report and looked at the primary sources and read the primary sources, but I'm guessing they didn't, because what they'll see is the strongest study that helps kind of NASM make that determination was a study from 2015 called Whiting et al. Mm-hmm. That was like the authors of the study, Whiting et al. And in the results section of that paper, the authors wrote, quote, most trials showed improvement in symptoms associated with cannabinoids, but these associations did not reach statistical significance in all trials. So like they admitted that their actual odds ratio, like from a statistics lens, was statistically insignificant.
Interesting. And
so the strongest piece of evidence in this whole thing relies on a study that says, by the way, our results are not statistically significant. The other study, the FDA admits that the negative side effects from marijuana were more harmful than any potential benefits. And the third study that they referenced said that the results were, quote, inconclusive. FDA even admits that. And then they say, well, these three studies prove that marijuana is medicine.
This is what HHS used to make the recommendation. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and it's like they could have scoured in any study. They could have used any study. And the three best ones they could pick, one is statistically insignificant, the other is inconclusive, and the other FDA admits has more downsides than upsides. Like, really?
Huh.
That's like half of your justification.
So if people want to look into this, it's the recommendation and it'll be the three studies that they cite or whatever.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's what they'll find.
Thank you.
Find me. I would love to get proven wrong because this has completely disillusioned me, this process. I'd love
yeah. to scout. No, that's why why I ask, so that people can look
please,
into it.
Please, someone come and prove me wrong. They also handpicked selector drugs, hand-selected comparator drugs. So like what they did was they said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to compare marijuana to certain Schedule I drugs and certain Schedule II drugs and certain Schedule III drugs, and kind of see in terms of its abuse potential and a bunch of negative aspects, how it stacks up to see which bucket it should basically fall under. Is it closer to the Schedule I drugs or closer to Schedule II or III? Okay. Yet they just handpicked what those drugs were. So they picked the drugs that almost like seemed the worst. So like they picked heroin in Schedule I. They didn't pick any hallucinogen, even though LSD is in Schedule I and some other hallucinogens are in those top three schedules, like psilocybin, LSD, peyote, mescaline, MDMA, DMT. They're all Schedule I substances. Those weren't selected. Instead of comparing it, like if the FDA is really going to do this groundbreaking review, shouldn't you compare it to all Schedule I drugs? Like, why just hand pick a couple of the random drugs that everyone universally agrees are kind of the worst?
yeah.
You know, it's like, and then
weed's,
you know,
not, and like meth and heroin.
Yeah. It's like really, the FDA didn't talk about any impacts on pregnant women and children. None. Like literally they didn't mention it at all. They had a bunch of other kind of misleading statistics. I think one of the most severe cases in this report, and I'll find it, of misleading statistics was regarding kind of the hospitalizations, emergency or like emergency department visits. The report basically said that marijuana has like the lowest value in terms of drugs they looked at, in terms of like number of hospitalizations. Yeah. And that's true. Like federal data shows that that's absolutely just like not accurate, actually. It was like probably one of the most misleading things in the report. So anyway, I've gone on for a while about this, but the point is, it's like, it's just, it's kind of like, in my opinion, a bit like junk science. Like there's no way around it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is going to be an interesting question. So is this the template? This is how we reschedule drugs? Because we're talking about in Oregon, right? They've allowed it for medical and I guess adult use. I just interviewed a doctor that does that.
You saw what happened yesterday in Oregon, right?
No.
One of the biggest developments in drug policy history.
I guess I missed it. What happened?
In a landslide vote, the state house there voted to recriminalize drugs and roll back Measure 110.
the House did, right? So it still
yeah,
needs to go by the Senate.
Yeah, but it's like I think it's gonna get signed into law.
Mm.
It's gonna happen. Yeah, it's gonna happen. I mean, I can't get, but like, I'm pretty certain it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They know they don't do it in the legislature and have an approach that's more democratic, like the party, like more, a little bit more liberal, that there's going to be a ballot measure that's going to be much more conservative. So that's why they're doing it. But it's being done.
Interesting. Well, anyways, these.
Anyway, yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. I appreciate you because I did miss that. And I appreciate you throwing it out there. But to back to your point that I think this is almost like maybe your fear. Maybe this is why you bring this up and you're even talking about it at length. Look, in Oregon right now, they can use it medically or just for adult use, whatever purpose. In Illinois, there's currently a bill at the House and the Senate level. It's called the Cure Act. It would do basically the same thing. I think I saw in Arizona, they just passed something through the House. So there's...
Are you saying drug decriminalization, just broader?
No. I'm talking about psilocybin in general. I apologize. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you for helping me to, because that is the scope I'm talking about. Not so much.
No, you're not just legalizing psilocybin, Cole. You're legalizing healing centers.
Correct. That's right.
So important you use the right language, healing centers.
Well, anyways, do you see where I'm leading to, though? Because if this two-part test says, well, hey, we just got to look if states are doing this, then we can reschedule, right? Could they hypothetically do the same thing with mushrooms?
This sets a very bad precedent, in my opinion. This sets a very, very bad precedent.
Yeah.
That's basically what the deal is. Since you brought up actually psilocybin in particular, I'm trying to find this right now. I didn't even think psilocybin and use. There was a study that was just released that I'll send to you. I can't find the graph for some reason. But in Colorado, you know how they legalize like psilocybin and the healing centers or whatever.
Colorado is another one. Thank you.
Colorado. So the youth use has just been like absolutely outrageous, like outrageous increases in youth use. It's crazy. A study just came out. It like actually skyrocketed so hard.
I wonder about that is whether or not, because if I was a kid and you asked me if I used mushrooms before it was legal, I'd tell you no. But when it was legal, I'd tell you yes. And I don't know, it may not be as simple as that, but I do wonder that all the time about the youth use. Like, are kids just more comfortable? Because like I was comfortable saying, we got surveyed sometimes and they'd be like, have you ever drank alcohol? I promise you won't get in trouble. This is just for data. And I'd be like, yeah, I've drank alcohol. Like, I'd be honest about it because I didn't think it was an issue. But when they asked if I smoked weed, I was like, no, I've never smoked weed before, you know?
Yeah, but that's a great point that you bring up, because the point you just made basically one of my points for me, that these policies really impact the normalization of the product, right? That the cultural normalization, you're saying that as a kid, you realize that once something becomes legal, it becomes much more normalized and the use of it becomes much more accepted, right? So like you're comfortable saying that because you don't think you're going to get judged. And like, there's two sides to that. Right. Like there's one side where you could say, well, if someone has an addiction,
Much judge, but the criminal part too.
The criminal part too. Right. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. You know, but like if you have an addiction, maybe that's good that like you're more comfortable talking about it or being open about it in that kind of an environment. Like that could be one thing that you think of. But on the other hand, then you lead to kind of like a more just mass normalization, and that leads to lower youth risk perception of use and all sorts of negative consequences, in my opinion. But
anyways, you were making the point though, and I cut you off. You're making the point.
Yeah, I can't find the graph now, but it's just like youth increases in psilocybin is basically what I'm trying to say.
Gotcha. You want to hear something interesting? I think you might find this interesting. I'm interviewing a high schooler later today, and I'm talking to them about how easy it is for them to get drugs. Might just be making a piece of propaganda for Sam.
Good stuff, man.
No, this kid, I know him and he can acquire drugs. So I'm just curious, like, how are you as a kid, a 17-year-old, able to just acquire alcohol, cannabis, you name it? And it'll be an interesting,
actually very interesting.
Yeah. Hard to arrange that, but it's the perks of having siblings.
Yeah. Is that like legal?
That's the thing. I can speak to them. Unfortunately, I'm making a joke here. I would never consume in front of a kid. I was like, unfortunately, I can't smoke in front of them. That's actually technically illegal in Illinois. Did you know that? You cannot smoke in front of, even if it's in your own house.
I didn't know that that was illegal, though.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
I didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we pretty well covered reschedule, deschedule. I wanted to talk about cannabis addiction. It's a real thing that even I've admitted I struggle with. But before I talked about that, I just wanted to like run some small details by you. There was an interesting development recently in Illinois where a medical patient who, as far as I was concerned, I don't mean to get into the nuance of the story and everything, but I was under the impression that medical patients in the state of Illinois, after speaking to legal professionals, that they do not have a possession limit. This individual was charged with possessing a little bit over 100 grams of cannabis. It was his personal stash. And I'm displaying the story that I wrote right now for folks that want to check it out.
I didn't read the whole thing, but I saw the story that you wrote on that. Yeah.
And what's interesting about this story is that so he gets charged with possession. It was a criminal charge at the time. I believe he pled guilty to it and his lawyer was able to expunge it. What was interesting was that it went the way that Sam or at least we've described. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm going to tell you what happened. So he got in legal trouble for possessing too much cannabis. He had to go to court. He had to do a few different things, pay some fees, and he was required to go to a drug evaluation.
Okay.
Which I thought was interesting because those are those are the recommendations that you've given in the past for like an ideal world. I'm not setting you up for a gotcha here. I'm just saying that it's interesting that is going on in the state of Illinois, a state that is quote unquote legal. We already kind of talked about this at the beginning, you know, the possession limits and why they exist. But it's interesting that I didn't know that it was more so the last part that I brought this up. He was recommended to do the drug evaluation. I always thought that that was just some idea you had to like try to get somebody else involved in the equation.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was something that's actually currently practiced in the state of Illinois. I thought this was like a proposal you had, like, oh, this would be a good idea. We need to have a drug evaluation if somebody's charged with possession.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one of our ideas, right? Like that's something that we definitely support.
Mm-hmm.
Great that that's happening in the state of Illinois, but it's still a state that has legalized and commercialized marijuana. So it's like, you know, our whole thing is like, you need to be, you know, proactive in different ways. Like you need to have proactive measures to kind of have prevention. You need to have good reactive measures, kind of like that. But like, we don't want to have policies that are just going to make the situation worse. Like it pisses me off, honestly. It kind of offends me, especially someone in recovery, when officials say, well, let's legalize marijuana and then, you know, we'll fund more addiction treatment. It's like, really? So you're just saying like, we're going to do something that's going to make the addiction crisis worse, but we'll make up for it by having more hospital beds for people who are addicted to drugs. Like, really? Like, that's so effed up in a way. I don't really, you know, so it's great, but it's still legal marijuana. So I don't know.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, like your overall goal. But in this case, and I know that we can talk about the fact that this is a unique case, just like last time I think I talked to you about this when I asked you, I asked you, I'm sitting in front of you, what is the thing? And you're like, Cole, generally speaking, I feel like I can trust you, but this is the thing, the broader populace, they go buck wild. This guy like was it seems like he was really what he told me. I want to be clear, folks, you know, I don't know. He's going to come back on the show and share the raid footage of what exactly, so I can better see the full circumstances. But from what he told me, he was really trying to comply with the law. I mean, he had a lock on his grow room door to keep his kids out of the grow room. And that's what's interesting. They took his grow equipment, but he wasn't growing at the time. I know we're getting into a unique case, but I guess the reason I'm even continuing to talk about this before we move on to the subject of cannabis addiction is because this guy just went through so much bullshit when really it seems like he did nothing wrong. Like DCFS came to his house. Like, it's not like he was smoking in front of his kid. Like, it seems like he was really trying to do, from what he tells me, I'll say that again. It seems like he was really trying to do his due diligence to be in compliance with the law. And, you know, I want to be more clear. The DCFS thing came up because they said, well, you've got a lock on the door. Are you locking your daughter in the basement? And he explained, like, no, the lock keeps people from coming in. It doesn't lock them. It doesn't lock them in. When you're in the room, you can get out as much as you want. It's to prevent unauthorized individuals. I guess what I'm saying is, Jordan, what happened sounded like kind of like the ideal situation that you were talking about, where he didn't go to jail, but he got, you know, he went through the system and then he had to go to a drug eval. And he said this was during the holiday season and it just fucked up a lot of things for his family. It, you know, traumatized his daughter because daddy's in legal trouble. And it's like she didn't even really have a concept, I would bet, that he even uses cannabis because he doesn't do it in front of her. So it's like this weird case where, are you frozen again? Are you?
Oh no,
Oh,
I'm just
no.
listening.
Okay.
Just
It was this
listening.
weird case. I was just making sure. Weird case where it's like, it does seem like it was like a responsible adult. Not doing anything wrong. And if you're asking why the cops showed up, that answer is unclear to me, but I will say that he has a very, very, very popular YouTube channel which covers law enforcement interactions.
Well, that makes sense.
Makes a little bit more sense, right? But it's just, again, you're right, the ideal situation played out and it just.
Look, when you craft policy, right? When you make policy, it has to be made for everyone in terms of just like you can't like you have to have something that's just generally applicable, and you can have as much nuance as, you know, you can try and have a lot of nuance in your policies and make it so that it's crafted well. But like there might be situations in which one person might think, well, that policy, you know, resulted in something a little extreme or a little unnecessary, this or that. I would just ask, like, is the system of getting an arrest record for possessing marijuana like really great? I don't think any of your listeners would say yes. I wouldn't say yes. There's certain cases, you know, I think there's some nuances, you know, sometimes repeat offenses, certain amounts maybe, but you know, we've gotten into that before. But like just generally for having a little weed on, you know. But how do you replace that with a system that is actually going to do something to safeguard public health, promote public safety? I think something like a referral is a lot better. I think he probably would have preferred this to going to jail and getting arrested and getting a record and having that follow him for the rest of his life and, you know, maybe do some time or whatever that will be, right? So I think it's a far better system. And you know, for guys like that who maybe he doesn't have a problem, right? Maybe he doesn't, like let's say he doesn't, like okay, like sucks for him. I'm sorry it effed up his holiday. But guess what? For the people who are struggling, that could save their life. That could put them on a totally different trajectory and kind of their path. And so that's really important. And when you craft public policy, I think you have to look out for kind of like the most vulnerable populations. And that's who, you know, would benefit from that kind of a system. So that's kind of like what my theory of the case is behind that. Doesn't mean that every single person who goes in front of an eval needs it. I'm not saying that that will 100% happen. Like there are probably going to be people who don't need it who have to go there if that's kind of the law, and we can try and prevent that. But like, isn't that preferable? And kind of doesn't that balance different needs and different things, like balance criminal justice and public health better than most other options? I think so.
Yeah.
We might disagree on that. That might be
I
something we
yeah, I
disagree
don't
on.
I don't I am just trying to chew on it. I guess the part that it is tough to me, like you say. I get what you're saying on the policy side. You can't always, for lack of better words, code for nuance, right? Account for nuance. I don't know. It just I feel like I know what you think about this, but it's the idea that people are like helpless. And I know, let me say what I think you think about this. I think you're acknowledging that some people get into a cycle and that they will never get out of it unless they're forced to by some intervention or whatever else. Maybe I'm phrasing it roughly, but am I right on Maybe that's why you feel.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the more nuanced way of looking at it is, in my opinion, right? And I might have even said this on the show, like, you know, whenever you reach rock bottom in an addiction, that's kind of the end of your phase of denial, right? You've run out of fuel for your own denial, right? Like the foundation of addiction is denial. And so once you are able to confront that and kind of admit that you have an issue, like when you talk, you know, some people are pro the 12-step programs and some people are anti, but like, regardless, I mean, I think it's great, but regardless, like, there's a reason that the first step is basically admitting you're powerless to drugs and alcohol or whatever, right? Like, that's why that's the first step, because programs like AA know that to go on a journey of recovery, you have to get rid of that denial. Right. That's why that's the first step. So my whole thing is, maybe it's not necessary for everyone, but from my personal experience, you start to have kind of doubts in your mind about your own use, and the denial starts to fade when you are kind of forced to see that your life and your path is not really normal, that things are happening to you that don't really add up. And they're really not happening to other people. And they're not happening to other people who use marijuana or use alcohol more in moderation or use other drugs, whatever it is, right? Like, for example, like for me, you know, I had friends who would hold an intervention for me. Well, guess what? They weren't holding intervention for their other friends who they knew smoked weed. It was just for me, right? Like, one of my friends called me and told me, like, seriously, talk to me, sitting down, like, it's time to start talking about quitting smoking marijuana. Well, she wasn't saying that to other friends who smoke weed. My girlfriend gave me an ultimatum, like, it's either me or this. Other people's girlfriends weren't doing that to them, right? And so for me, like, I finally started after a while to get the message. There are people out there who never get that message and they die in addiction. There are people who are so deep and in such peril to themselves and others that they need some things to fast track that process. And I think that the criminal justice system can possibly be a way for some to help fast track that. Because guess what? Really, most people don't serve a night in jail because of their substance use. Most people are not doing that. It's the people who have a problem who are doing that. Right. So the point is, maybe they can sober up and look at themselves in the mirror and say, oh, shit, like, this is not normal, man. Like, what the hell is going on in my life? Like, that can be a rock bottom. So that's why, like, I think that's kind of a necessary element for some. And I, by the way, totally 100,000% believe that if you spend any time in jail, have a record for things related to, like, drug use, you know, as long as it's not like violent things, that if you complete a program, if you're on the road to recovery and you kind of re-enter, like, that should be scrubbed. Like, your record should be wiped, your record should be expunged, it should be sealed. Like, you should not have things, unless they're violent acts, that are like impeding you from kind of re-entering society, like getting a job, like supporting yourself, supporting family. That's, I also strongly believe that. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for getting into that. And, you know, it's an interesting conversation that I'm sure that we'll continue to have. One thing that I haven't brought up with you and in these conversations, I'm curious to hear about. I've seen more of a movement recently. I feel like this would make you happy to see people trying to be more responsible with their cannabis use. I mean, have you heard the term tolerance break before? Like, a lot of people.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me that a lot of people are doing this. I've even familiar with this community online. I'm sharing it right now, and I'm sharing this for people that might need help. This is called PTLs. It's a positive community for those interested in responsible consumption of cannabis. Discussions include everything from tolerance breaks to personal feelings and cravings. There's 141,000 people. There's people joining. Anybody else not excited to start a tolerance break? Here's my progress. I'm new here, also a little scared on day two, on day six. You know, there's people talking about cannabis-induced psychosis. There's some good conversation here. Now, I would say that there's another subreddit called Leaves. I feel like they are more.
Yeah, I know Leaves. Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of them because they are just like abstinence only. I feel like this is, it acknowledges the nuance in that the subline of it is for the reduction, moderation, and responsible consumption of cannabis. thought it was an interesting community to see.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Look, I think we get very complicated and messy very fast when talking about moderate use, especially for people who definitively struggle with addiction. I think that can be a very messy kind of area and potentially dangerous, in my opinion, area to kind of wade into. And I have my own thoughts about that. But like, if there's someone who is trying to have, you know, healthier use or whatever, like, that's great. Like, that there's a community for that. Like, I'm not against that at all. Like, there's,
I was just asking, like, are you surprised?
No, I'm actually not surprised. I'm not, when I was smoking over 5 years ago, like, you know, tea breaks were a thing. Like, I think as marijuana has, you know, exploded in popularity even more since then, right? Like, even since 5 years ago, it's way more popular. Mm-hmm. So people are exploring. I mean, I see on TikTok all the time, like, influencers who smoke weed, you know, talking about taking tea breaks and things like that. I think that when you come to addiction and stuff, in my opinion, it's just much more of a binary thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's just, I kind of, the reason if you saw me smile there is I'm not laughing at addiction. I'm laughing at the idea of tolerance breaks, because if you think about it, and I think we actually have talked about it once before, like, it was a small point that I tried to make and we moved on. But if you think about the discipline that it requires for a tolerance break, like you're saying, like, I'm going to abstain so that I can get fucked up. Cause I mean, that is the point, generally speaking.
Yeah. It's right. It's like such a ridiculous, and do you know what
but isn't that crazy? Like, I know you're going to disagree with, I say it's crazy responsible. Maybe you don't
I
completely
agree. I agree that that's like, this is like my thing about kind of moderate use for people who have struggled with substance abuse. Right. Mm-hmm. It's, again, I think part of the denial thing. Like, if you really struggle with substance abuse, there's a strong likelihood you've had people in your lives tell you that you're putting yourself at risk, that you're damaging relationships with your friends, with your family, that you might be damaging your work. You might be, you know, you're having some negative consequences, right, in your life, likely. It's very unlikely that you're not. So, like, if, and yet those people will deny that they're like addicted to drugs, right? There are people who deny it. So I always say, okay, like, let's say you say, no, I'm not addicted. I'm fine. I can just reduce my use or whatever this, right? Like, if someone told you, if your entire support system was telling you, Cole, like, just as an example, I'm not singling you out, I'm just saying, like, Cole, like, your peanut butter and jelly eating is out of control. Like, you're destroying your relationship with your mom, your job. Your girlfriend hates you, is about to break up with you. I'm assuming, Cole, you don't really have a problem with PB&Js, right? If that was really the case, you'd be like, oh my God, okay, chill. I don't know what you guys are talking about, but, like, right, if it's that the deal, I won't eat PB&J. Like, geez, man, like, chill out. You probably would be like, if it was like your mom was going to cut off a relationship with you, you'd probably stop eating PB&Js, right? Because it's not that big. It's not that deep.
Right.
That should be the reaction of every single person who goes through that with a drug like marijuana. If they really aren't addicted, it's only the people who are addicted who will fight tooth and nail to, like, continue the use and say, no, I'll moderate it. Like, I'll work on it. I'll take a tea break. I'll do this. I'll do that. It's like, bro, if you're not actually addicted to it and your life sucks and everyone is telling you you have an issue, just stop. If you're really not addicted to it, you shouldn't need to keep doing it. It shouldn't be that deep. So if it's just a hobby, it shouldn't be that deep. So that's kind of why I'm so skeptical. I'm like, those people who are, like, obsessed with moderation like that, who have struggled with heavy use, like, just skeptical. I think just abstaining is the safest. There's no harm to abstaining. There's, like, literally no harm to abstaining.
Yeah.
So that's my thing. Like, it's kind of an easy choice. I mean, not easy to do, but in terms of just, like, logically.
Right.
So that's kind of my fall on that. But yeah, I actually never thought, Cole, about that. It's funny about the tea break thing, like, with the, just such a bizarre, I never thought
the
about
forethought
that.
That's required.
That's actually very bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just an interesting idea. And here's where, you know, I have admitted to you that I personally feel I have an addiction to cannabis. Like, it is, besides the fact that I do enjoy how it makes me feel, sometimes I've even noticed that, like, I'm like, oh, I got to do a podcast. I got to roll up a joint. I mean, I I just did it here. And I'm like, but I don't even, it's just like habit, right? And so, you know, I've admitted it to you. I also saw this post on LinkedIn recently. Let's share it. This person, this popped up on my feed, Brett Puffenbarger. I have a confession to make. It's something that as recently as a week ago, I would have vehemently, I can't say that, vehemently denied. Something I would have said isn't even possible, and anyone claiming it is full of shit. I am addicted to cannabis. Not like I love it and need it to function. Wait, not like I love it and need it to function. That's still very much true. I mean, like physically. Sorry, I read that wrong, but you know what I'm trying to say. As many of you know, I was trying out a new method of tolerance break. That wasn't working out, so I decided to take the best of the myriad advice I received and put it to test. I went cold turkey. I took hot baths to sweat it out, drank a ton of fluids, the whole nine yards. I got the sweats, no appetite, nausea, mood fluctuations, tired. You name it, I was experiencing it. Worse than when I quit smoking cigarettes, as bad as any alcoholic I've ever witnessed. I've known a lot, but that's a story from a past life for another day. Point being, I know what it looks like and I experienced it. I don't know what it means for me. I don't love or support the plant any less. I don't think it's more dangerous than I did before. No plans on changing much other than whatever it takes to bring my tolerance down and get me back to a place where I can enjoy the plant. Not sure if I have a point other than I didn't want to experience this personal revelation in science, in silence. Anyone else experienced something like this? I've experienced something like that. When I've tried quitting cannabis, I got the sweats, I lost my appetite, I would get nauseous while I was eating, I would have crazy dreams, I would have those mood fluctuations.
Yeah,
I've
the crazy dreams
personally,
are something I think are really common.
yeah, I've personally never, like, I'm not addicted to cigarettes. I do drink occasionally, but I wouldn't say it's so occasionally that, you know, so I don't have another struggle with addiction. This is the closest thing that I do have. And yeah, I've had physical withdrawal symptoms and I'm not afraid to admit it. Did you have physical withdrawal symptoms when you quit?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it makes
definitely.
sense. You're changing your
So,
biochemistry, right?
I
You know?
mean, I think the two biggest things that I experienced, or maybe a few, were like, I mean, there would be times where I would like when I didn't have it and I just was like so like using it multiple times a day, every day, and I didn't have it like going to bed at night or something, and I was like relying on it, like felt like ants were crawling under my skin. So like, I mean, I've experienced nicotine withdrawal as well, and it actually pretty reminiscent in a weird way to what I felt with nicotine withdrawal, which was just interesting in that specific kind of one symptom. I mean, when I quit totally, I had like no appetite for days. Like
Yeah.
I couldn't even eat like half a sandwich like for an entire day,
Yeah.
like days on end. That was something I noticed. Total like total depressed mood, like depressed, like I guess depression, like I guess I never even thought about it until I just said that out loud, but I guess depression in a way.
Yeah.
I had almost like an inability to experience elevated mood. I would literally just lie in bed all day. I couldn't even watch TV because like I needed marijuana to like watch TV and to enjoy TV and to laugh at a TV show or to, watch an interesting movie, and just, because I was smoke and I'd feel like, oh my God, like I'm getting so deep into it, like on another
Yeah.
level thing, right? So like it was literally weeks before I turned on the television. So
Yeah.
like that kind of thing, I felt like, somewhat mental, but also somewhat physical. So
Yeah. You know, one of the things
also,
you
I know
said.
this is a serious conversation,
Go ahead.
but and I really respect that guy for making that post. His name can't really be Puffin Barger, right? Is that right? That cannot be the guy. Like
I
that
don't
would be
know.
perfect
Yeah,
for the
that's a good question.
marijuana industry. That's his real last name.
Yeah.
Puff. That'd be perfect. Anyway, sorry. I just looked at that and that was the first thing I noticed was the
No,
name
that's
of
funny. I didn't even think about that. That's funny.
the
No, I yeah. So it's just an interesting topic that I thought it's, you know, I know that some people really, by the way, some people take issue with me like agreeing with you on a point like that. They're like, "What are you doing?" It's
So
like,
weird.
I'm being honest.
Yeah,
I would be
no, and I
lying
really
if I
respect
didn't
you for that,
say
man.
that if I, you know, thank you, by the way, but I'd be lying if I didn't say that that happened to me. And but I'd also be lying if I didn't say that just like this person, it's not so much like you just described it for me, but that's just for me, right? I don't feel I have a problem. And obviously, you know, you're different. One thing you said to me, I think after we were on air last time, that I realized I have a lot in common with you, is that I cannot keep snacks in the house because I'll eat them the fucking first night. And I was like, when you said that, I was like, wow, he really does have an issue. And then I thought about it and I was like, hold on, Cole, you just bought a box of fruit snacks last night and that box of fruit snacks is no longer in the house.
Yeah, so I have enough. I don't know if I was, I think I might've explained to you this way. So I have enough self-control that like, if I'm in the grocery store, I can like easily not purchase it.
Right. But if you bring it home, or whatever,
the second it's there, it's freaking toast. Uh-huh. I'm actually myself. I've had a box of like Lindt chocolates that I got like around Christmas time from someone else. And like, it's still less than halfway done. And it's been like a couple months. And that is like the biggest improvement I've ever made in my life with that. My roommate, I think I was even telling you this, my roommate in college of 3 years, he had like basically no appetite. Like he didn't eat that much, but whenever he just ate like pure crap. He like literally never ate a vegetable in his life probably. So he would go to the grocery store and buy all this crazy crap and it would last him, you know, like 3 months. But the thing is for me, and we would like share food. It wasn't like that bad. Sure. Like we were fine with that. Because it was in the apartment, oh my God, I was just like, I would get out of bed at night and be like, you know what? I want some more of those donuts.
Right.
It's like horrible. It's like, oh my God, it's there. But he was totally fine with it. So, you know, so it was just terrible for me. So I gained 20 pounds in college.
Yep. Yep. But, yeah. So like I say, I can relate to you a lot there. And yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting point. I think people should get the help if they need it. I think these services should be widely known and widely available. I think the point, and I know we've basically beat this horse dead, it's swollen now. I think the point where we digress or split is like the idea of a mandatory thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's tough for me because I could see, and I hate to use my, but it's like, it's all I know is myself. I could just see somebody trying to categorize my use as problematic. And to your point, yeah, I get a little anxious about the idea of somebody like saying, hey, you can't, like, you're going to go to this and you're not going to be able to use anymore or whatever the case might be. So that's proving your point that I am addicted because.
Right.
Right. Another example is and a comedian said this once. He said he was on a road trip with several other comedians and he was like, hey, man, can we stop real quick? I want to just load up a bowl and smoke. And he looked at the other guy and winked at him and he goes, no, we're not stopping for another 4 hours. And the guy just started losing it. Like you would have thought you told him, like he was, but I got to be able to smoke, blah, 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 you know, starts freaking out. And he's like, dude, we have to get gas. We're going to stop. You can smoke. Like, you know, but to your point, people can get really touchy about it, you know? And yes, yeah. I think it's indicative of an addiction. You know what I mean? And I do believe that one of these days it will be taken a little bit more seriously, you know, and there are starting to be notices posted at dispensaries and on just products in general that says, you know, these products are not to be used while you're pregnant.
Right.
And they are. So can be
they
addictive.
Didn't always have, but like, I'm glad that they have them, but they didn't always have them. It's like some of them used to even advertise to, or still do advertise pregnant women.
Yeah.
The addiction thing, it's like, dude, for some people, it's like talking about marijuana, like the addiction word is like literally like sunlight to freaking Dracula, man. Or to
right.
Dracula.
And I don't see it. That's the thing. It's like,
oh my God, no. Like, it's like, oh my God. You know, it's like if people are losing it, by the way, like if people are losing it to like our conversation, you're really losing it that much and you have that much of an issue. Like, normally, if you disagree with what someone says, it's like, oh, that's stupid. Like, I don't feel the need to go ape shit in the comments,
right?
And, like, literally
call them names,
come for your life and just like be like, you are evil and terrible. It's like, guess what, I've never said that about anyone on any issue, and I have some pretty strong convictions. But if someone disagrees with me, okay, fine, I just might, maybe I could just, oh, you're an idiot, whatever, you know, like.
Yeah, well, I want to be mindful of your time, and I know we always go pretty long, but I want to be mindful of
minutes after 4:20 here for me.
yeah, it's 4 minutes after. Surprised you made that joke before me. but
I'm full of surprises, man.
Yes, you are. I was gonna ask you, like, I don't think I've maybe I did ask you this last time, but why do you sit down with me and like give me your time? And like, I got to imagine that the people, like, when you have floated this idea in the past or something, they're like, why are you going on the pot podcast or something? Or do they not really care?
Yeah, because I just think like because I like you and like our conversations, and there aren't really that many formats that are interested in talking about this issue,
Do
where
you
you
go on
can.
other podcasts, for lack of better words?
I mean, I go on other podcasts and do interviews. I mean, I just did an interview about Virginia's legalization plan, which, by the way, I mean, like, you know, I think this would even piss you off. Like, when I say they don't prioritize public health, after the money, the tax revenue in Virginia under their bill to commercialize, after, you know, how should I say, like, so out of the tax revenue gain, they're going to use part of it for like actually enforcing like regulation, right? And then, like after that, whatever's left over, only 5% can be used for public health awareness. 60% is for like their micro businesses program. Like, really? Really? And 5% is for public health like campaigns. Like, seriously, it's kind of a joke. But no, so like I can talk about those things, but like when you go on TV, you have like 5, 10 seconds to make a talking point. I mean, I just did an interview for Virginia, it was great, and the reporter was really nice, but guess what? They used about one sentence out of a 10-minute interview. So it's like I get the chance to do that, and you know, maybe I change one person's mind. Or not even change their mind, but maybe on like change their mind on one little issue in the grand scheme of things. And I love talking about this stuff, and there aren't that many people, and I'm just very also fascinated by kind of your position and how, you know, I think honest you are, and I have a lot of respect for you, and I don't have a lot of respect for so many people in this space, unfortunately. And the fact that we can, you know, find common ground is really rare. So enjoy doing that whenever I can.
Well, I'm curious about it. Thank you for and I look forward to many more conversations with you, Jordan,
Yeah,
because I
of course.
do, even though we don't always agree, I do enjoy my conversations with you, and like I learned things too, like you we brought up with the Oregon thing earlier. I saw Sam shared a study recently. I just thought this was interesting. I'm not even really it's like I ask you about these things. I saw this and thought of you and Sam, just in general. It's interesting to see. I just interviewed the CRO and CEO of this company. Good advice. This is from MariMed. Good advice for cannabis lovers. Choose non-smoked options for a healthier heart. Seems like they were in, it seems like they were acknowledging that study that you guys were sharing, and I saw other people share. Am I wrong? Wasn't there just a study that came out that said something like smokable cannabis is bad on your heart? Am I wrong?
There's just a major study that linked marijuana use, but you know, I believe so I'm looking at kind of these articles, so I'm sure smoking is worse, but I don't know if it was just for I think it might have been.
For all?
I think it might have been for all, because so
Okay.
smoking was the common. So this is from NBC. They wrote smoking was the most common way cannabis was consumed in the new paper, although edibles are not necessarily safe either. I think maybe this was one of the guy who wrote the study. I just don't have enough time to go through this whole thing, but
All good.
someone was quoted saying, "If you force me to answer, I would say not smoking is a better way of consuming it. When you smoke things, that makes them more toxic, but that doesn't mean that we can definitively that we can say it's definitely safe to consume in edible." So, you know, like, look, it's oh, so when you eat an edible, apparently. So if you're smoke someone else said if you're smoking marijuana, it's probably doing double the damage compared to just using edibles. When you use the edible, the THC goes into your body and can cause vascular inflammation. Whereas when you smoke, there's damage from the particulate matter, from the particulate matter, and then the THC gets absorbed into your body as well. So, like, yeah, I mean, I think that probably should be obvious to most people, right? Like, I think, you know, if you
Yeah,
click on a
smoking.
said, like, oh, you have to either choose. Of course, I think the edibles. I mean, I think also what you probably know even from experience as well is like the dosages in edibles can be maybe a little bit trickier sometimes, right? Like you don't know, maybe it's not evenly distributed throughout an edible, whereas it's going to be a little different like that when you smoke it. It hits later. So especially for new users, consumers, like you eat it and, you know, an hour later you feel fine and then you take another one and then 2 hours later you're totally screwed, right? So I think there's some different types of dangers, but in terms of like raw health impacts, I mean, I'm sure smoking is worse.
Yeah.
The fact that people have for years been like smoking marijuana is like fine for you. Great. Like, why are you comparing to cigarettes? I'm like, you're still smoking stuff.
Right. I like to say that all the time. Science. All right. You're still lighting something on fire and inhaling it.
It's like, yeah. Who thinks that's good?
Yeah. One thing I love about you is that it is obvious that you did smoke, just different things that you've said through our time. Like the fact that you were calling it tea breaks earlier showed like that's like a colloquialism among you. Like,
yeah, no, I've been accused of being a paid actor, but I'm glad right. I'm wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad I proved that wrong.
At least you've convinced me in our private conversations and everything else. Like, no, you're not lying. You did use it a certain time. You just know way too much about it. It seems like.
If I can explain how to, what's it called?
Like, you could probably talk somebody. You could probably like explain how to take a dab. You'd be like, look, I don't recommend this, but I can coach you through how.
Dude,
to
I think if I can explain exactly how to smoke a cart without a pen with a USB and which ones exactly how to go through that process and make that happen, I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's pretty much only inside information. How to strip the wires and which wires to cross.
Right. So the last, I've just got a few more questions as we close. And this question I have to ask because every time I have you on my podcast, somebody tweets me and says, why didn't you ask them who funds Sam? What can you tell me? You can't tell me anything question, or what?
I don't want to answer. Oh yeah. I'm guessing your viewers say, let me guess tobacco and pharma fund Sam, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So we take zero money from big tobacco, big alcohol, big pharma. Okay. Do not take any money, $0. So that's just one thing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't work for Sam if they did. And after so many, you know, after years, guess what? Like, it doesn't even make sense. Funny people are like big tobacco funds you. I'm like, why would it like, why would they even want to? Like, they're investing hundreds of millions and billions of dollars into this right. Pharma, alcohol, and tobacco. Like, why would they do that? Like, pharmaceutical companies are buying up, you know, medical marijuana companies. Like, they just are. Like, you can read those stories. Why would they fund an organization that's trying to, like, prevent that? You know, it doesn't even make any sense when you really think about it, but we wouldn't take it even if it was offered. Our money is donated by private individuals, right? Like most of the time, it's people who have family members, kids, husbands, wives, parents, whatever, like who have struggled with marijuana use, who have seen negative impacts from marijuana use, could be something as small as like, not small necessarily, but someone who struggled with dependence or addiction. Some people, their children, psychosis, die by suicide, you want to give a comment to the cause. People's marriages break up from, you know, marijuana, and, you know, some people, you know, want to give for that, or just, you know, there are also just people out there who are seeing the negative impacts of legalization and want to see that kind of prevented. So all sorts of different people, but it's just kind of private donors, and we don't take money from those addiction for profit industries. I'm not going to give like names, but you know, that was, by the way, a scandal, a supposed Sam scandal was like that.
I was going to ask you about that. Cause that's ridiculous.
No C4 gives that up.
Yeah.
Like they wanted to know our Sam action, which is our C4, right? They want, like, people wanted us to disclose our donors and they say, like, no C4 discloses their donors. Like none. Like it's like part of the, it was absolutely absurd. It was absolutely absurd. Like, go to any issue you care about, there's going to be a million C4s that exist that do work on it, and none of them disclose their donors. and like whether you agree with them or not. It's not like a statement. Like some people, and also inherently what's, I mean, you think that they don't want to just, we don't want to disclose because you think we're being funded by a tobacco, not right. you, but people.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Right? Okay. But I can't say definitively, but guess what? Like this issue is so charged. There are probably people who care about this and maybe they don't want to take the shit from people. Guess what? The culty pro marijuana people can be ruthless and cruel. I mean, someone did this happen when I was last on your show that someone found a video of me talking about my recovery on the same Instagram account from 2 years ago. And my mom did a clapping emoji.
Oh, you told me about this at our lunch together. Yeah.
Yeah. And so my mom commented on did clapping emoji. Someone told her you should jump off a bridge and kill yourself 100 weeks later. To my mom, which was, by the way, just like pissed me off.
So yeah.
It's like maybe stuff like that happening is why some people might like not want to be super public of support all the time. Not that we don't have public supporters, but like maybe think about your actions and how, you know, the same people who are screaming at us to disclose everything are probably the people who are saying those types of things. So that's just my two cents on it. It would be incredibly abnormal and almost unethical probably for C4s to disclose that kind of stuff. So
yeah, makes sense. Well, I will say, and this is just to make you laugh, you probably don't appreciate it, but I'm saying it, these people bought me a meal once while we were in DC, right?
Oh, yeah.
You bought my meal. And I just have to say, this is the part you won't appreciate. I was high during that meal. So they bought a high person a meal. You know,
I'm not surprised. I'm kind of expecting it.
I'm not,
do I discourage that? Maybe, but I'm not like moralizing to you.
Oh, yeah. And I'll say that for the record that when I hung out with you, I mean, I figured you knew I was high, but it wasn't a conversation. It's not like you were like, Cole, before we hang out and proceed, I need to take your cannabis levels of your blood. You know, it didn't even come up. And I even asked you, not that I planned to, but I believe I even asked you, I was like, if I, for example, hit my vape pen or something.
Yeah, you did ask me
that. Yeah. And you were like, I mean, I prefer you not to do it around me, but it wouldn't be something that ends our day together. You know?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So,
I say that to humanize you a little bit more. Like,
yeah, thank you.
We hung out. Hey,
listen, if you're listening this far in, I'm a real person.
Yeah.
I'm a real person who lives a real life, and I'm not just like I don't sit in my room at night like punching my pillow, screaming how mad I am that people smoke marijuana. Okay, like that's not how I live my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that's what people think, though. That's what
like
people
Arthur
think.
Arthur Fist, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I literally hate people who smoke marijuana. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That's
every time you look at the clock and it says 420, you're like, son of a bitch. I know
literally,
somebody.
Literally punch my clock. Literally throw up. You have to get a new phone twice a day every time.
That's funny, dude. Well, I feel we've pretty well run the gamut. Let me just double check and make sure that everything I wrote down, I feel like there was this last point. Iron law of prohibition. We've talked about it before.
Oh yeah.
I saw that Kevin Sabet, I believe, retweeted like something about it. And he said like iron law of commercialization. And I was like, I actually like kind of get where he's coming from, but the where I disagree with him here it is. Let me share it. Let me share the tweet. I saved it because this is for Kevin. He'll be able to see. Yes, sometimes if you see a bookmark, it's Cole. He's bookmarking your tweets for later reference. Here it is. I bookmarked this one too. You can see I've bookmarked two Kevin Sabet tweets. More like iron law of commercialization. So he's retweeting somebody, Keith Humphreys. The ill-named iron law of prohibition attributes the potency of drugs to their illegality. Now that cannabis has completely disproved this, it should only be a century or two before academics stop making this claim. I don't.
Keith Humphreys, by the way, Keith Humphreys is an internationally respected addiction expert who is a renowned professor, teacher at Stanford University. And he was just here testifying for the US Senate. He's like renowned.
Yeah. How do you think that cannabis legalization disproved? I don't mean to make you speak on Keith.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know, like, I haven't seen the tweet, so I'm not going to speak for Keith, but I've talked about this before, so I'll speak for kind of like what my opinion is. Like, I understand kind of what the iron law prohibition meant, but there's kind of a iron law of commercialization, as Kevin said, which is that they want to sell more. What we talked about before with kind of that 80-20 rule, or, you know, 60-70-20, whatever it is in different kind of industries, that shows that industries like this need to kind of make their products more addictive. They need to get more people dependent and hooked on their products, right? And what's the number one way to do that is to make it more potent, right? Like, you're going to have more people addicted to 30% THC joints rather than, 3%. So you're going to increase that potency because that's what people want, right? And there's a lot of studies, like, there's data. So for example, I had actually typed some things up. I'll have to find it. But about kind of a bill that we were like looking at, I think I actually might've asked you about it. But I don't have the statistics right in front of me, unfortunately. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I have them right here. So okay. So for example, and I'll be quick about this. So, according to one study, more than half of frequent concentrate users from legal states typically use at least 80% THC concentrates and 30% THC flower. So most of frequent users are using the upper limits of potency, right? The industry knows this. Another fact, that the average in 2020, the average potency for concentrates in Colorado was 68%, around 68%, for vapes around 80%, and the average edible kind of concentration were like around 737 milligrams, maybe per standard dose of an edible. Weed Maps or Leafly or something did sign of a survey of its users and found that over 3 years, concentrates and edibles made up over 30% of sales. So like my point being that the industry knows all this data, and they know that all, the average product that they're selling is higher concentration, and that the most heavy users are using products that are even higher concentration than that on average, at least. So like the iron law of commercialization means that because this industry exists, because this is the reality within that industry, they're going to need to keep jacking up the potency in order to increase their bottom line, because the people who are giving them the most money and their most kind of the returning customers are demanding that. And it's kind of like a vicious cycle of that. So that's why we say iron law of commercialization. That's why I assume Kevin said that.
Yeah. I mean, I actually agree with like it on the face. I agree with that. And actually, I'm about to play a short clip that reinstills your point. I just view, I guess where I get caught up, I always get caught up in the nuance of it. I like to point out that concentrated forms of cannabis especially are products, I would say, of prohibition because weed is so smelly. Let's just be blunt about it. It's easier to, I didn't even mean to make that blunt, but pun, but it is big and bulky, like the flower. It's you can't compress it, or people won't find it, like that's flower that I just showed. You can't compress it, or people won't find it as like aesthetically pleasing. But concentrate it, you could put it into a thing and pack it and smuggle it much more easily. Not only do the users like it more, but it's easier on the trafficker. And so I view these products as products of prohibition. But like you say now, yes, of course, these operators are leaning into them because the users, especially the heavy users.
Split it both ways.
I think both are true. Yeah, that's a good way of saying.
I mean, I don't know. I need to read. I'd love to read more about what Keith says about kind of like he seems to think that's a little debunked. I'd like to read more about that.
Same.
But yeah, I think there's probably a lot of truth in both of those things.
Yeah. Well, after we watch this clip, I think we can wrap because I don't have much more. But this is the context.
It's almost 5 o'clock here. I've had a long week. I'm crashing. I'm crashing after this.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. Well, this clip, like I said, I think kind of reinstills your point in the context of tobacco and alcohol. The context of this conversation is not exactly what we're talking about, but you'll see how it relates. Let's check it out. You'll also recognize this show. Joe Rogan and Cat Williams. He's pausing.
Speak. We value strength in product. So there's this whole thing with liquor and malt liquor and the difference between the two, and one is richer and stronger.
The more potent version.
Right. And as a people, we tend to go with those products.
Things are stronger. That makes sense.
Right. Like before, things were called concentrate.
Yeah.
That's what we appreciated.
That makes sense.
Concentrated. And the fact that...
Yeah, that's the point, really. Just thought it was interesting in a different context how people can prefer concentrated products, and it doesn't even really didn't even really relate to what we were talking about, but
in terms of the
iron law of prohibition. But I thought that was interesting. To your point, companies will push more potent products on all of their customers. So
of course. Well, man, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and love this format. And
likewise,
let's do it again sometime soon.
Absolutely, Jordan.
We will. I don't know when it will be, and I really don't, unfortunately. But after the rescheduling decision from DEA comes out, I'm sure we'll sit back down and go over that. There'll be probably a lot to talk about either way.
Yeah. That's what somebody says that does know when it's going to be. You got an inside source. You just don't want to tell us. You know when it's going to happen. I'm just joking. Jordan, I appreciate you. Seriously, dude. Just appreciate you. I've said it at length time and time again, but I just want to say it one more time. You're one of the easiest people that I book with. And it's just surprising to me because I am seen as a pro-cannabis, pro-drug policy show, but some of these cannabis companies are a little hesitant. Cause I have a nuance in my beliefs. I will acknowledge.
You're not like all hail to the corporate.
Right. I don't get down and kiss their feet. Yeah, exactly. So anyways, that's all to say that I respect you. Thank you for sitting down with me for so long, as always. And folks, I hope you found as much value in this episode of the Cole Memo as I did. Jordan, we'll see you on the next one. Take care.
See you. Thanks, Cole.